I think to have awareness, you know, and I do think every time you walk into your OB, there's a pamphlet about postpartum, you know, it's being talked about, you're having awareness about it. But I think having an awareness that your partner can be affected as well, I think is crucial. And so we can be each other's mirrors. We can look out for each other and we can say to each other, like, you don't seem yourself or you don't seem right.
You thought it, but we said it.
I'm Alexis, a certified leadership and life coach, certified postpartum doula, sourdough educator, CrossFit level one trainer, birth fit coach, a beauty counter brand advocate, and a mom to two kids.
And I'm Sam, a certified and licensed therapist and mental health first aid trainer in a 9-to-5-ish job, along with also being a beauty counter brand advocate, in addition to being a new mom and open IVF storyteller. We consider ourselves to be walking balancing acts and fellow mindset shift mavens. Perspectively Yours is our platform where we dive headfirst into conversations on topics that can make or break us. We speak to women about the things we often think but don't say out loud, and how we can shift our perspectives around them to build our resilience and normalize our experiences. This is for the woman who wants a full plate and a full cup without burning out.
We're sharing our stories and inviting others to the table to provide insight on cultivating resilience, shifting your perspective, and moving forward.
So let's spill the tea and get started.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back for another episode of Perspectively Yours.
While here we are.
And I catch up for a second.
How the last few days been?
Well, if you can't tell, I sound super congested because Logan so graciously shared his cold with me. And we're not really sleeping at night. So I'm thinking we're in a regression and molars are coming in and I don't know.
We're
surviving.
He's almost a year old, right?
Next week.
Yeah. I feel like once they're 18 months, something happens and this stops being as much of a thing. For most
people. I'm
going
to hold you to that.
So I'm not making any promises, but usually things start to settle down around 18 months.
Oh, well, we'll see about that. But yeah. This is actually perfect conversation for our guest today, because we're going to be talking a little bit about the postpartum space and what that looks like for families, and really how we help our male counterparts, for those of us who have them, in navigating that transition as well, because it really is a major shift. So I would love to introduce Michelle Friedberg, who is a licensed clinical social worker and runs the Women's Wellness Center of Bergen County, which is a private practice specializing in maternal mental health. Michelle has been a practicing clinician for the past 18 years, treating women with perinatal mood disorders, as well as anxiety, depression, and other life stressors. And one of her areas of strength is working to empower women, including becoming mothers, transitioning back into the workforce, managing their relationships, and parenting. And I can attest to all of that. She completed her clinical training at New York Presbyterian in White Plains, working on acute schizophrenic unit, followed by additional therapeutic work at New York Family Services in Pelham, New York. And she received her undergraduate degree in journalism. I did not know that, from the University of Maryland. And obtained her Master of Social Work degree from New York University. Prior to entering the mental health profession, Michelle was a publicist for Scholastic Books. I don't think I knew that either. That's amazing. Yeah, we have so much more to talk about.
Yeah.
And is married, has two children, 17 and 14, and resides in Bergen County, New Jersey, where we have a good number of listeners as well.
Welcome.
So welcome, Michelle.
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you guys. This is great.
Well, I want to start before we even get into like our topic of conversation. How did you move from journalism into the therapy space?
That's a good question. You know, actually, one thing I left off my bio is that in between journalism and working for Scholastic and becoming a therapist, I actually worked in my husband's family business, which was baby furniture. And I was the publicist for his family business company. So I really got very connected to pregnant women and families and dealing in that space really before I even went back to graduate school. So you know what? After we got married, I just decided I wanted something more. And I took a chance, went back to graduate school in my 20s, and then never really looked back.
That is so cool. We've been having conversations lately.
Breadcrumbing.
Yeah, about breadcrumbing and like picking up pieces as we move along. From all these different professions and not being so one track, like, well, this is what I decided to do, so I'm going to stick with it, but instead figuring out where we need to go. And that sounds like exactly what you did.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah, I would have never thought that this is where I would have ended up at all. So it was a really good journey that got me here. And I'm very grateful for it. The journey is part of the package.
That is so amazing. And you took a leap, you said, too. It was really a leap for you.
That's awesome.
It's funny because I actually had a minor in English writing because I wanted to work in journalism. I actually worked for, I did an internship at Bauer Publishing in Englewood Cliffs. Mm-hmm. And they were a little bit of a hot mess at the time. But yeah, it's, you know what? I almost wonder if there's some like relationship in some level of creativity with self-expression and like helping other people to do the same. I kind of like, that's where my mind goes at least.
Maybe that makes sense. Yeah. I miss that creative part of the work. And certainly even working in the baby industry and having retail locations was very creative for me. I love doing all the decor and all the buying and all the stuff like that. So I'm certainly also a very creative person. And I don't do a lot of that now in the current space that I'm in.
Yeah. Well, I would argue though, that the creativity comes in the form of your conversations, right? And still like the solutions and the way you think about things and the insights. And I really do think that people in the mental health space, and maybe it's just what my experience is as well, kind of have to have some sense of creativity in the way that they approach in order to really build resilience and move forward. So that all makes sense to me. So we often talk about the postpartum experience when it comes to women, and we'll certainly talk about women as well. But if we're thinking about the family as a whole, what is that experience like for men?
Well, so it's really interesting because there's a really high comorbidity between maternal postpartum depression and male postpartum depression that, you know, men have a 50% more likelihood of having a perinatal mood disorder if their partner has a perinatal mood disorder. So, you know, I think the experience becomes we usually have two parents in the home who are suffering. Sometimes simultaneously for women, it typically happens closer to, you know, right after they give birth, you know, more in like that 0 to 3 month period. And for men, it's typically more like 3 to 6 months. Over that whole year, we're certainly seeing two parents that are, you know, both suffering in different ways, having major impacts on the family system structure. Certainly the marriage could affect bonding with the child, could affect lots of different things.
And diagnostically speaking, men suffer from postpartum depression?
Yeah. The numbers we're seeing are anywhere between 1 and 25% of men suffer from postpartum depression. There is no clinical diagnosis like in the DSM, but certainly from all the research and studies that we see, about 1 to 25% would fall into that category. Yeah.
And that number is that reported numbers? So that doesn't include like all the ones that go unreported. So that is just what people are showing up in with clinicians and such to get diagnosed with that, which we know like that's a similar number with postpartum depression or perinatal mood disorders in general for women. Mm-hmm. It's also just what's reported. It's not necessarily what people are suffering with and not getting any support on.
And I would bet that the numbers are probably even higher, given that men are likely, correct me if I'm wrong here, are less likely to actually seek out help.
That's correct. Yeah. And they're also not being screened nearly as much as their counterparts, right? So women are going to their OBs, they're going to their pediatricians, and they're, you know, getting screenings. Men are not. So, and again, I think culturally, we talk much more about maternal mental health and much less about paternal mental health. So I think people are looking out for us moms, you know, they sort of know what signs to be looking for. And there's an expectation that hormonally we could be suffering. And so our families and our partners and our friends kind of all at this point know what to be looking out for. But I think for men, it's certainly not the same.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were to include those depression screenings. Like, I know I got like 17 of them, right? Mm-hmm. Less than I had this conversation not that long ago, where I got one from the social worker and I got one from my insurance company and I got one from, you know, a coach. And so I had all these different check-ins, which to be honest, I personally think that they should be over a longer period of time than just within your first month, because your first month, you're also potentially and likely getting a lot more help. And I think as that help goes away, it's a lot harder. And males in that perspective, dads here, are used to then having the support of others and it's not falling on them as much. But I wonder if those screenings should include men moving forward. I mean, how do we even create that influence?
Certainly. I mean, I think the pediatrician would be a great place to start since a lot of couples go together to the pediatrician for the first couple appointments. If the man has taken some time off from work, let's say. So that would be a good place to start, I think.
I guess we're going to have to make a call to Dr. Goon.
We were talking a little bit before we started your experience with men and couples working with them and what you see. So can you go over a little bit of what you currently do in your practice, who you work with, and what you are typically seeing with families?
So because I primarily focus on women, I don't get a lot of men individually, but usually what will happen is they'll come in as a couple, right? And they're suffering together in the marriage. And, you know, if that's happening in that postpartum period, and again, that could be anywhere from right after we give birth till, you know, 3 years after the baby is born. So usually that's how I'm getting in front of a depressed paternal person, more so than them coming to me individually. And, you know, what we'll see there is just a lot of strain on the marriage. There's a lot of distance. You know, we have a child. And so all of a sudden, mom is very much turning to that baby. She's her focus, her attention. Often we find that the husband is feeling left out of that little bond, that he's not necessarily included in some of what's happening, specifically if the mom is breastfeeding, right? So she and the baby have this bond. She might be the one who has to get up. She might be the one who took maternity leave and he didn't. So there's that. Certainly there's a change in our romantic or sexual connection. And, you know, we're just not a couple anymore. We're a family now. So that puts a tremendous amount of strain on the marriage.
Do you feel like you see people most of the time coming in as couples when they've had their first baby? Is it just kind of a full wide range of people that are coming in with these struggles? What do you typically see?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest adjustment is really going from 0 to 1. You know, your entire life changes when you have a baby. I think when you have your second, you're already kind of used to having to put individual needs aside for the needs of a child or the family. And I think the biggest adjustment really comes from having no child to having a child. And again, there's a lot of factors that might be there, right? Like, what was our pregnancy like? Did we go through IVF? Was that already stressful? Were we already under a lot of strain there? So really depends on kind of where they're coming from that might influence where they land in the postpartum period.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors going into it that I think mm-hmm. a lot of people don't really understand, that there's a lot leading up to this point of having a baby, like our personal histories as well, like the mm-hmm. way that we grew up, and just so many different factors that once you have that baby, it just all kind of like comes to a head and it's all together and it's all very difficult and stressful. I think when we imagine a depressed person, we kind of have this idea of someone who's just sad all the time and can't get dressed and can't take care of themselves. And, you know, like just that's kind of the general idea. Maybe they're crying all the time. And I think, at least what I have seen in clients that I work with as a postpartum doula, men's postpartum depression and even women's postpartum depression, because they're still having to take care of a baby. And so it's not like you can just check out completely. And so I think for a lot of people, it can seem like, well, I'm still functional, like I must not be depressed. But what do you see differences in moms versus dads in their postpartum depression experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there is really a pretty big difference. For women, we are going to see the clinical makeup that you've just described, right? Someone really sad, unable to sort of have any self-care, maybe lack of interest, even trouble bonding with the baby sometimes. And sometimes we are seeing women who really can't even take care of the baby, right? But for men, they're going to present differently. They're going to present more angry than sad. They might be more irritable. They might be more disconnected. They might have more risk-taking behaviors like substance abuse. So, you know, their presentation is not going to necessarily look like a clinically depressed person. They might look like just a very angry and irritable person.
Hmm. Do you think that that's because women are more likely to show up as like in offices having depression versus men? And that's where we get our like diagnostic criteria from. That's where we get our ideas of like what depression looks like, is because we just see more women who are willing to say, I'm struggling with this? Or is it just postpartum depression in general looks different for men than like general depression?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that men and women sometimes can present very differently with their depression. I think sadness is often a feeling that maybe men have more trouble expressing. I think they get there. And I certainly think once they start the clinical work, you know, they're more likely to be able to express that sadness and get to the root of it. You know, certainly what shows up first feels like anger. And, you know, I think what also happens, because we were sort of talking about how this is happening simultaneously for the man and the woman, oftentimes like her needs get put first, right? Because she seems like totally out of sorts and maybe not really like herself. So we're getting her into therapy. We're letting her sleep. We're sort of showing up and really giving her a lot of support, hopefully. And often her male counterpart is like left now picking up all the pieces. He might be back at work, but he's also now doing night shift and he's, you know, very possibly, you know, having to take care of another child, depending on how severe his partner is, right? So him being able to say like, whoa, I need to be taken care of right now, like might not happen because he might not feel like there's space for that to happen.
Yeah. And I know that I have seen that play out in certain clients that I've had. And it's almost difficult for them to like shift into, oh, my needs matter. Like, it's important for me to say that, like, I need this right now, because I will say, you know, I'm here for everybody and that includes you. So you get to go do something. And I've noticed it can be difficult for them. Like their heads are typically in, well, I need to take care of mom and mom needs to be like the number one priority. And it's like, you are 50% of this baby's relationship and you matter too.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I think when you are feeling like your partner is struggling, it's hard to be like, oh, me too. You know, like, you know, I think we often don't want to, and we weren't the ones who gave birth, right? We might not be the ones breastfeeding. So we might not feel entitled to feeling that way. But, you know, hormonally for men too, they go through hormonal changes in the postpartum period, just like women do, not maybe as extreme, but certainly there are hormonal differences. So that on top of lack of sleep, on top of all this pressure now, maybe financially, there's new pressures. Logistically, there's new pressures. We take away social outlets, self-care outlets. Maybe you can't go to the gym as much, or you can't see your buddies as much, or, you know, you can't do things that you used to do for yourself. So there's certainly a lot of risk factors for everybody involved bringing a baby home.
I actually, I'm thinking of a few things. We're talking about taking care of like what's priority and taking care of things. At least I can say from our experience, I think that there was this extra pressure to provide in that moment, that my role was to provide, not me, him, and somewhat of a lack of recognition that I needed to take care of myself, because it wasn't a matter of putting me first. It was that my role is to provide, not to take care of me. And I think that as a female as well, I wonder how many women recognize that their partner is struggling with postpartum depression, rather have more resentment towards their spouse because they're not at the top of their game. They're not being the provider in more of a caring sense, not from a financial standpoint. And there's a frustration because we've gone through something so monumental. How likely is it for us to recognize that they are really struggling?
I think that's a really good point. I think especially if we're struggling, it's hard to care about somebody else struggling, and it's hard to notice that somebody
else
is struggling.
We've been doing it longer. Like, yeah. 10 months we've been carrying this baby.
Yeah. It's like, I kind of don't feel that bad for you. Like, you didn't just have your whole like body ripped apart and you're not, you know. So I think it's really easy to kind of neglect them in that space, especially if we're symptomatic ourselves. I mean, I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, as I'm just reflecting back on my experience, and Rob actually had shared, a friend of his had admitted he went through postpartum depression, which was the first time I had ever heard that, which is, I think, where this initial idea for conversation came about, because I was so taken back that that was a thing. Like, feels like I should have realized that, but also because men don't talk about it, right? They don't acknowledge it, that they're struggling. And so when we started to kind of think about this as a topic for us, I was wondering, how can I show up for him while I'm also struggling? But if there were times that that wasn't even top of mind because I was so much in the weeds of my own struggle and adaptation that I was getting mad at him for not adjusting and not bonding. And even though I understood it on a logical level, I don't know if I really gave him the space to do that.
Probably not. And I think you wouldn't have been alone. You know, I think a lot of us sort of fall into that trap where it feels like it's our transition, not, you know, like our own personal, not us as a couple. So, you know, I think that probably happens a lot. And I think the more attention we bring to this topic, like the more awareness there'll be.
So how do you help the family as a whole in this sense? Because I know you primarily work with women. So mm-hmm. how are you able to help the family kind of make this shift together?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, it's developing empathy for one another. Like, you know, I think couples often become extremely competitive, like, well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm getting up with the bottles and I'm doing the, you know, and so, you know, it's hard to feel like our partner's actually doing something also. And to show them some empathy for like, we're both sleep deprived and we're both struggling to adjust and we're both feeling like we're missing our friends and we're both scared we're going to make a mistake and we're both anxious that the baby's okay. Like, you know, so having empathy for each other, that it's not like you own the corner on this and like we can't share it together, I think is the first and foremost, most important part. I know we may have talked about this at some point, but like, you know, women tend to become the captain of the ship. And we like to be the captain of the ship because it feels good. We're in charge. We get to have things our way. And then what happens is that our counterparts are the co-captains, but co-captains wait to get orders, right? So they wait for you to say like, can you do the bottles? Can you do the bath? Can you do this? And oftentimes they don't like jump in the way that we want them to, because they're waiting, because they feel like this is your domain. You were the one who carried this child for all this time. You're the one maybe reading all the books. And so I'm going to wait for you to tell me what to do. And often we see that as one of the really big stressors in a relationship, because the women are feeling so agitated by their partner not knowing exactly how to help.
Do you feel like this is a new issue? Like, we expect way more of our partners than we used to in previous generations. And so for me, it's like I have a level of empathy of, you were not modeled this. Most men were not. And I can just imagine how you have no modeling. We don't like societally know as men, like we don't have a blueprint for this is how you show up as supportive. And it just seems like something that is such a right now issue, because we're in this huge adjustment of, we want our partners to be there for us and helping with us and working with us alongside us. And yet we have also, women have just been conditioned and mothers have been conditioned, like we are the captains of the child rearing boat. And yet somehow we have to figure out how to shift. Do you think maybe in a generation or two, like this might not be quite as much of an issue?
Well, it's like a really interesting topic, because I think about this all the time, like with the whole captain of the ship theory. And what I'll say to the women patients that I see, like, how would you feel if your husband came home and was like, oh, I booked the first birthday party. It's going to be at Chuck E. Cheese. And these are the favors. And I already invited everybody. And you would be like, whoa, like that is absolutely not happening. Like, I'm going to decide what the first birthday party is. And I'm, you know, but, you know, like I picked the nursery school the kid's going to go to, and I decided, you know, what kind of diapers they're going to use. Like, you know, we very much want to be in control. So that is right. A little bit more still like this generation, like the woman being in charge of a lot. And so I think you're right that as we have evolved, we certainly expect more from our partners, and they may not have had that modeling from their own fathers. But what I say to my patients is like, this is where you have to be very specific. So instead of saying, I need help, say, can you do the bath tonight at 7 o'clock? Can you put him or her down at 8 o'clock? You know, can you do that feeding with this bottle? Don't expect that intuitively he may just know how to show up. And you don't need to be angry about that, because you're both figuring this out as you go along.
Well, here's my question to that, though, because even when I have asked, there's pushback of where the priorities lie. Well, I still have to do this. I'll give you an example. It didn't turn into an argument of any sort, but we had a rough night and we were scurrying to get him out the door. And I had said, can you please change his diaper, get him dressed, and I'll take care of his breakfast and lunch and diaper bag or whatever. And it was, oh, well, I got to get on a call and I have to do this. And so there's even bath time last night. It was, oh, well, I don't feel well. Well, I don't feel well either, but we both have to give him a bath. So my question is and it has been modeled, so I will be clear. So I'll use my own personal experience. It has been modeled. But where do you see that push and pull of, like, even when it's been shared, like what the expectations are? And I feel like for men, there's a little bit of a struggle in rearranging the priorities when they can be a little bit more focused on themselves. How do you navigate that when it's been asked?
Look, that's the age old question here. I mean, how do we get our partner to sort of understand our needs and just to, you know, not push back when we're asking them to do something? And so I think in each individual relationship, I think we need to talk to our partners about, like, how can I ask you for help in a way that doesn't feel like you're going to resist? Do you need to know ahead of time? Or is it the way I'm asking you that feels triggering? Or is it that, you know, I'm asking you at all because it's not your expectation? So we should be talking about what are your expectations for these things? You know, oftentimes, like, we bring a child into this world and, you know, everyone just has their own expectations of how it's going to go. Oh, I thought you were going to be staying home with the child. Oh, I thought you were going to be staying home with, you know, I thought you were going to be, you know, doing the bath and the bottles and, you know, and we don't really talk about how we're dividing up all the labor that goes into childbearing. And we just have, like, our own expectations. We don't talk about it.
Do you think that all of the clients that you see, they haven't had those conversations beforehand? Like, every single person is, oh, we just thought that this was how it was going to go, and we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I think majority. I think they might talk. The one thing they'll talk about is if the mom is going to go back to work or not. Mm-hmm. I think that conversation comes up more often. But I think then there's this immediate idea that if she's staying home, then she's doing everything with the baby. So if I'm the worker and I'm the breadwinner, then that means she's the one getting up, doing all the feedings, and she's the one, you know, being sort of that captain of the ship that we're talking about. And that is not always necessarily the case, nor should it be the case. But if we don't talk about it, that can often, I find in my practice, can be the assumption.
One of the things that I, and Alexis and I have talked about this quite a bit, in having to be the one to worry about how it's received on their end, and, like, how do we manage? How do we figure it out? And I almost get, like, this visceral reaction of, why do I have to worry about how you're going to perceive it, mm-hmm. when it should be, like, your equal role in this, when we've talked about that? That I don't want to have to worry about whether or not it's going to trigger you. There should be a level of expectation of you being the equal parent here.
I feel like I've seen that all the time, like, in people being so frustrated of, like, I don't want to have to worry about your feelings in this. We're just all showing up here trying to get stuff done, and I don't want to have to worry about that.
Yeah, I think that some of that has to do with expectation, like, especially if you grew up in a household where your dad was, like, not domesticated in that way, not doing dishes or not helping with kids stuff or not carpooling or doing homework or changing diapers. It's not what you saw. It's not what you were modeled. So in your head, you might just think, like, that's how it is. Like, that's how it goes. Like, and so if we don't talk about those expectations, like, oftentimes the partner is triggered. And then the female partner in this case, like, is resentful. So yeah, I mean, I think talking about those expectations ahead of time is certainly important, and not just assuming.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me because in our case, it was modeled, like, we had an equal partnership, I'll say, but there always was one parent home. And so I think that that plays a role in it as well, as I'm just, like, processing this out loud in my free therapy session here. But I did want to ask, what barriers do you think really prevent men from finally making the jump into seeking help? Like, at what point do they recognize, like, I need to talk to someone?
Number one, I think they feel like, well, this is maybe how it should feel. Like, this is how everybody feels when you have a baby. I think some women certainly fall into that too. I think they also feel like what we talked about before, like, if my partner's struggling, there's no place for me. So I think that becomes a barrier. I think a lot of men feel like I should have this together. Like, I should be the breadwinner. I should be the rock. I should be the person that my partner can rely on. And if I'm not those things, what does that say about my masculinity? What does that say about my role as father or my ability to be a good leader of this family? So, you know, I think those are major barriers. And then I also think time. I think we are so much busier now than we ever were, especially for second and third children. Like, you often become the person that is taking care of those needs now, whether you're taking that first kid to soccer because mom's home with the newborn, or, you know, and you might have worked a full day. So, you know, I think all of those things preclude men from making the time to get into therapy, sure.
I think that leads into the next question that we wanted to ask, because I don't think that men see themselves as being so vital in the family dynamic. And so how does postpartum depression in men affect their ability to bond with their newborn, to support their partner, to support the rest of the family? How does that impact?
there's a ton of research that shows that a paternal counterpart having perinatal depression is going to affect your child having emotional, behavioral, social issues, developmental issues, more aggression, 0 to 4. I mean, you know, there are certainly a lot of consequences that I think nobody is really talking about. I think it all feels like, well, if mom's okay, then everyone in the family will be okay. But typically mom's not okay if dad's not okay. And then certainly the kids aren't okay if mom and dad, or just one mom and or dad are not okay, right? So if dad is distant, if he's disconnected, you know, and he sort of maybe stays at work later, goes out more, mom's feeling like she's left holding the bag, you know, she becomes resentful, she's shorter with the kid, you know, she's doing a two-person job alone, and there's going to be more tension and stress if that's how dad chooses to sort of deal with it.
I love what you said, that everyone thinks that if mom's okay, everything's okay. Because for a long time, I think people have really thought that as long as mom is healthy, but mom is not necessarily healthy if dad's not okay, because mm-hmm. he is the other part to her dynamic. And yeah. so mom does really need and want dad to be okay in order for them to have a strong partnership. And I think as women, we sometimes forget that, that it's not just about us being okay in order for the family to really thrive.
That's right. Yeah. I think that we have to recognize that this is a two-person job and that our kids are equally as affected by both parents, and both parents being present, both parents being mentally healthy. It's not just, you know, mom's okay, then we're all okay, for sure.
Do you see the same struggle with, and I don't know if you've worked with, but with same-sex parents?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the same. You know, I think that the parent, if we're talking about two females, I think the parent who was the one carrying the child, you know, often goes through the more typical mother role, and the non-gestational parent, you know, might also feel somewhat isolated, might also sort of have some of the same reactions that our male counterparts have. And just like, I'm the co-captain and I'm, you know, you're in charge here since you were the one who delivered the baby.
As we're getting ready to wrap up here, what would be your words of wisdom to a new mom who is trying to help navigate this shift as a whole, being the captain of our ship, right? So that we're a whole healthy family. What would your words of wisdom be to mom as she starts this process?
It's a good question. I think to have awareness, you know, I think that when we get pregnant, we're so excited and we're often thinking about all the things that are to come. And I do think every time you walk into your OB, there's a pamphlet about postpartum, you know, it's being talked about, you're having awareness about it. But I think having an awareness that your partner can be affected as well, I think is crucial. And so we can be each other's mirrors, we can look out for each other. And we can say to each other, like, you don't seem yourself, or you don't seem right. You know, look, for women, I think the number is something like 80 to 90% of women experience baby blues, right? But that typically goes away after a couple of weeks, and it's not abnormal. And so when we see those kinds of things, we feel less panicked. But, you know, I think our partners are also very in tune with us when we don't seem as connected with the baby, or we don't seem as interested, or, you know, I think it feels like more alarming. And I think that if women could sort of also understand that their partner needs to bond with the baby too, and he needs to feel included too, and, you know, he needs sleep too, that, you know, that awareness, I think, is probably my biggest piece of advice. Like, understand that he might not just be choosing to disconnect, or, you know, choosing to not be home as much, that he might be suffering as well.
Yeah. I think that the piece of, it's not that they're choosing that because they don't want to be there. It's because they just, like, don't know what to do with all of these big feelings and big life changes, because that can lead to such a miscommunication, and you just don't understand that, like, there's so much more to it than they're just working more and they're not holding the baby more.
That's right. And they are at work all day, you know, they've missed out on all that bonding. And oftentimes your mother might come over, your aunt, your best friend, you know, so you find like another female figure to sort of bond with and connect with, because that feels safe and that feels comforting. And so oftentimes, like, I'll hear from my male patients, like, I don't know where to put myself. Where do I belong in this puzzle? Especially like those first couple of months.
And I love, Alexis and I have talked more recently, this is just my last thought on this, about how when a woman delivers, right, everyone's always worried about the baby and the real importance of taking care of mom. And I think that that's been a really great shift in our conversations and our narrative around postpartum, right? The baby doesn't necessarily need to always be held. It's that the mom needs to make sure that she is eating and sleeping and so that she can function at her best capacity, right? But I do think that men have been left out of that conversation the more that we're talking about this. And it actually makes me feel a little sad for them that they have kind of felt maybe on this island alone sometimes. So I think that taking care of the parents postpartum feels like a much more inclusive message than just taking care of mom.
Oh, definitely. And that's where I think grandparents and familial support is so important because, you know, it's not just like giving mom a break, it's giving dad a break. It's helping the entire family unit adjust to this big life change. And yeah. I think just, you know, the sheer fact that mostly it's mothers who take maternity leave, especially first, you know, it's how you get assigned the job captain, not only carrying the baby, but, you know, also then you're the one typically home with the baby. And so, you know, oftentimes it feels like, well, you get to go live your normal life. Like you get to go to work and you get to like, you know, still do things for yourself and I'm stuck home. And, you know, we forget that it can be hard also to be the one who has to leave and has to go to work and, you know, doesn't get to take that time to bond and be home.
Yeah, that's a major perspective shift.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for coming and sharing with us. This has been really great conversation. So
yeah,
it's going to be awesome.
Thank you both. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, we will be back next week with another episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. Just as a reminder, this podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice or mental health services. If you are in a mental health crisis, please call the Suicide and Crisis Hotline at 988 or 911.
Did today's episode of Perspectively Yours hit the spot? It would mean the world to us if you'd show us some love with these three effortless ways to help your fave podcast thrive. First up, the most important, never miss an episode by following or subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Just head over to our show page, tap the plus sign, and select follow. Next, leave us a shiny 5-star rating and review on your podcast platform. Your feedback helps us make each episode better and better. Last but not least, share your favorite episode with a friend. The power of word of mouth is undeniable, and we would be over the moon if you spread the love about Perspectively Yours.
Before we let you go, here's a fun fact. We met through Beauty Counter, our favorite clean beauty brand, and are both brand advocates. If you've been looking for safer products that actually give you results, you can get 20% off your first purchase with the code CLEANFORALL20.
Don't forget to follow us each on Instagram at Ms_SamanthaKehoe and Alexis.TheNourishedBeginnings. Send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Be sure to check out the show notes for any resources we mentioned.
Thank you for being here. We are grateful for your support and love.